45.
I'm still amazed at some of the things people do for money. I've always believed that money comes and goes. Enjoy it while it lasts, save what you can, but don't ever expect it to keep coming forever.
Charles awoke early the next morning with a feeling of contentment and peaceful happiness that couldn't be suppressed even if he wanted it to.
It was good to see my family.
As he got up from the guest room bed, which was just as comfortable as the master, he gave a good-natured grumble in the direction of the massive pink tiger that had taken over his previous sleeping space. The thing was stretched out lazily on its back, with its bottom half on the floor. It peeked out of one eye at him as he passed by the doorway. Even if it wasn't real food, the kitchen was calling for him. He hummed softly while he made his eggs. They turned out just a little bit better this time. As he ate the unintentionally runny eggs, he looked at the real-world clock. There was something he had to leave the game to do in 10 minutes, but how much time that meant in the game was still beyond him. He wasn't going to try to do the math. Instead, he would just watch the clock. Charles heard a knock at his door and sighed. He thought about answering it, but decided he'd finish his eggs first. By the time he was done eating, the knock had become a loud pounding, and his ghostly roommate was leaning out of the wall to look at him with one eyebrow raised. Charles had been married long enough to know that meant, "Aren't you going to get that?" But he'd also been married long enough to know that most often the person raising their eyebrow was just as capable, and Charles shrugged it off.
If the knocking had bothered her too much, she would have answered it herself,
he grumbled loudly, inside his mind. He knew that saying that out loud was an invitation for trouble later. No, not then, but days or weeks or years later. He'd possibly have to hear about it many times, and he wasn't going to take that risk. With a heavy sigh, he rose and made his way to the door, completely ignoring the satisfied look on her face.
Couldn't let me finish my breakfast before these folks came knocking.
Although he didn't grumble too loud, because he was secretly hoping it was his great-grandkids coming back.
Maybe they forgot something.
Because of that hope, he could only look out in disappointment at the young people standing in his doorway. Those same young people that guided him to the cabin stood outside. Python Mike, with his axe, stood next to the shorter Red Baron, who still had been unable to get rid of his beard. Behind him, the lady with the tentacles, although Charles was having a hard time placing her name, and a whole crowd of adventurers stood or sat or lay. They looked beaten and bruised and broken. Many were still covered in blood or pieces of something. The two men had a look of surprise on their faces when Charles jerked the door open. He didn't say a word as he looked around, seeing all the folks on his yard. Mike, for his part, lowered his hand that was still in the air from when it was knocking on his door. Charles took a deep breath, preparing to give them a good scolding for pounding on his door so early in the morning when he felt the hairs on the back of his neck stand up. He hadn't had that feeling in years, but he knew exactly what it was. A quick glance behind him confirmed it. That banshee woman was floating there with her arms crossed with intimidation.
Oh, beware the wrath of the mama.
While logically Charles knew this woman, his roommate, wasn't anywhere close to what his wife had been. She was a thing of the video game, and couldn't hold even 1/1000th of the value of what he felt for his wife. The feeling he had from her potential disappointment, though, was one that brought back memories and old feelings. Those memories and old feelings were worth more than diamonds or gold or cryptocurrency. The feelings were also overwhelmingly bittersweet. The threat of his wife's disappointment to get him to behave wasn't one that he ever cared for during his marriage. In fact, he'd often fought against the threat, doing exactly what it was she didn't want, just to rebel. And he knew there were times his wife had done the same thing to him. It was one of the many undercurrents in their marriage that made it real. Real marriage isn't a happy ever after. Real marriage is a game of risk, blackmail, bribery, and on good nights, Twister. It was also a warmth, like a blanket. Now, with his wife gone, to feel a hint of that undercurrent was just enough to be a reminder of what he missed. So, while normally he would have become irate at the idea of some video game character threatening to give him a scolding, in this instance, he gave way to her threat. To say that Python Mike and Red Baron were shocked, expecting to see a grumpy old man and instead finding themselves face to face with an old man smiling at them with grandfatherly kindness and patience, would be an understatement.
"How can I help you, lads?"
Charles asked with a smile. Mike's mouth opened and closed a couple of times while Red Baron rubbed his eyes in disbelief. Mike seemed to overcome his shock first.
"Honored Elder, we have come back to tell you that we've failed," Mike said, and then looked down in embarrassment.
"Well, not completely failed," Red Baron chimed in.
"Dude, that was your quest. You might have succeeded on that one. But what does it matter?"
Mike answered back a little condescendingly. Charles wasn't sure what was going on and was about to ask when he received an unusual notification.
"Your battle mount, Rigor the Tiger, has decided it is now your pet. Accept? Yes, no. Warning, if you do not accept, your battle mount may leave your service."
Charles was stunned.
"I can't let the tiger go free. It was a gift from my great-granddaughter. But since when does a battle mount get to decide?"
Charles stopped himself. It suddenly made sense. It was a cat. It was going to do whatever it wanted anyway.
"I need to find some fish to bribe it with."
Mike and Red Baron watched Charles's face go from confusion to shock to angry concentration and assumed the worst.
"Wait, wait, Mr. Charles, before you get angry. Come listen to what happened."
Mike waved his hands in front of himself while Red Baron was quietly stepping backward. Both men remembered the stick, and that was the main reason they had taken so long in bringing the remains of their army. Their words shook Charles from his thoughts and brought him back.
"Eh?
Come, let us tell you what happened."
Red Baron was far away, almost off the porch, and waved Charles towards his lawn. Charles, for his part, just grunted and followed them while mentally selecting yes to the tiger prompt.
"So, after we left to take on the blood cult, we made it back to the capital," Red Baron started as they walked.
"We made much better time without an old man slowing us down," Python Mike muttered,
only to be slapped in the back of his head by a tentacle. For some reason, the sound of that slap reminded Charles of her name, Altwater. They continued their story as Charles stood and listened. Red Baron had mastered his inner parasite and become a true blood master, whatever that was. They had gathered an army of 50,000 people and launched a campaign against the blood cult. They weren't able to stop the summoning, however, and a world boss eldritch blood squid had destroyed their army. Which apparently meant that there were 50,000 players that lost 500 fame, continent, and couldn't get any more quests, which is what brought them here. They hoped Charles would issue them a quest to destroy the world boss. This story had to be explained several times to Charles as he kept scratching his head about fighting a giant squid until they told him it floated. It did leave Charles with a few other questions, though.
"So where is the rest of your army?"
Charles asked.
"Over there."
Mike waved, and the crowd of defeated players parted to reveal another larger group of young people in his woods, revealing the adventurers to be actually two groups. In between the two groups, two very loud women were screaming at each other. Behind them, both armies seemed to be squaring off to fight. On one side, a familiar winged guildmaster, Windy Caroline, faced off against a familiar armored harem slayer, too much for men to handle. Charles wouldn't have recognized the second player with her fancy new armor if it weren't for the system putting their names in letters above their heads.
"Oh, she's the one I gave the harem layer stuff to. Ah, do you want to go over there?"
Charles asked as neutrally as he could. Interrupting two bickering women was not something he had any interest in doing. One could almost say that it was his greatest weakness. If he were to see two women arguing in his path, he was more likely to turn around and walk or even run the other way. It was better to do anything else, even if it meant days of travel. Neither of the other two men seemed interested either, but eventually Python Mike started shuffling in their direction. After about 5 paces, he turned around and looked back at them forlornly.
"You aren't coming too?" he asked.
One might think him a puppy with the way his eyes glazed over.
"You got this, bro," Red Baron said encouragingly.
Charles nodded sagely.
"This is one of the greatest tasks a man can undertake," he chimed in.
With a dismal look, Python Mike turned away and walked towards them. His shoulders were hunched and his head hung low. To even call it a walk would be a lie. It was more of a shuffle.
"Better him than me," Red Baron muttered.
Charles was about to nod along when a tentacle slapped the back of Red Baron's head. Charles looked at Altwater, who had a smile on her face as she shook her head. Charles didn't say anything. He was especially silent on the fact that Altwater could have easily volunteered to go herself, but had disappeared into the crowd of adventurers until someone else undertook the task. All three of them, as well as the rest of the small group of adventurers, watched in silence as Python Mike made his way towards the two arguing women. It was almost like a movie theater. They cringed as a group as the two women turned their verbal weapons upon Mike in full force, and Mike could only slump as he took their assault full force. After several unpleasant minutes, the assault ended with Mike shrugging, and then he turned back towards Charles, the two women following behind him. When they arrived, both women continued to bicker, and Mike just went to stand silently next to Red Baron. Charles overheard him whisper,
"Dude, you should have gone. I got +5 willpower just for standing there."
Charles just shook his head. No reward would be worth subjecting himself to that. He glanced at his real-world clock. 5 minutes left until he planned to log off.
"Mr. Charles, we cleared the forest like you asked," the winged guild leader said with a small bow.
The other woman let out a derisive snort. But something was bothering Charles. In the forest, on each side of the two armies, there were many, many people hiding in the shadows and bushes and trees. At first, Charles had thought they were part of the armies, but during the bickering, he noticed that the two groups didn't move to support either side.
"So, who are they?"
Charles asked, and pointed out the hiding. As a group, all the members' eyes followed in the direction of Charles's finger, but they only had looks of confusion on their faces. Charles just sighed and picked up a stick from the ground. He chucked it at one of the people hiding in the trees, and the stick fell short, landing about the edge of his yard. With a grumble, he picked up another stick and walked closer, not realizing the entirety of the two armies had all stopped what they were doing to watch. This time, when he threw this stick, it bounced off of a tree trunk. Charles frowned.
"Throwing sticks is harder than I remember."
This time, he picked up a rock. With a swift overhand toss, his stone arced through the air and pegged the head of a man hiding in the branches of a tree. The man fell from the branch onto the forest floor. Now, Charles was very surprised. The rock hadn't gone anywhere close to where he was aiming. He had seen plenty of folks hiding away, but he had been aiming at a man crouched in the bushes 7 yards away. There were just so many people hiding that it wasn't hard to hit someone. Charles knew then and there he would have no luck getting the rest of the hiding figures to come out with rocks and sticks, so he decided to try a different method.
"Are the rest of you going to keep playing hide-and-seek, too?"
Charles grunted and waved his hand in their direction. Surprisingly, a good number of the people in front of Charles stopped hiding, men and women wearing dark leathers and holding crossbows and daggers standing tall. Although Charles could see them clearly, the gasps from the other people around meant that they couldn't. Slowly, a tall skeleton with black bones wearing dark clothes walked out of the forest. Dark clouds of smoke, or maybe mist, floated out of his clothing as he walked. He came while dragging a small, struggling figure behind him. He stopped in front of the group, letting go of the person who fell to the ground like a sack of rocks. Charles could feel the malevolence in the skeleton as it stared directly at him. Charles, for his part, wasn't scared. In fact, he barely paid attention to the angry skeletal man. What had Charles's attention was the real-world clock that just hit 4 minutes.
Almost time.
You are the man who ordered my shoes stolen,
the undead man growled, black fog coming from the skull's mouth as it spoke. Charles, for his part, he didn't even look at the man. In fact, he hadn't been paying much attention and only caught the last two words spoken. Instead, Charles looked back to the other side of his lawn and noticed that the hidden figures had only revealed themselves on half of it. The skeleton, though, must have thought Charles was looking to escape.
"Don't think you can get away from me," it shouted as it lurched forward as if to attack.
People around him spread out, not wanting to get caught by this creature. Charles squinted his eyes at the group still hidden, ignoring the impending threat. He thought he recognized someone. Just as two enormous black skeletal hands were about to grab him from behind, he called out,
"Grandma Theedle? Is that you?"
he asked, while cupping one hand to the side of his mouth. The skeletal hands froze in place. Out of the forest on the other side of the clearing, an elderly woman walked out slowly. Some knew her as Grandma Theedle, others knew her as Iona the Spider, the kingdom's spy master. Behind her, a long cloth fell away, revealing a line of knights on horses. Charles frowned.
"Maybe I went too far with the skunks, but she didn't have to call the cavalry. She's the one that ruined a good afternoon tea."
This left four armies surrounding his lawn, he realized. Directly facing his house, the two armies of adventurers stood. On their left, the army of thieves, dominatrixes? Charles wasn't sure. To the right of the adventurers was a line of cavalry.
"Mr. Charles, it has been so long."
"I don't want any more of your damn tea, woman,"
Charles answered. Having so many people around him was striking his nerves. While a certain ghostly woman had asked him to be polite with her implied threats, Charles was losing his patience. It was starting to feel like a drama. All it needed was,
"Mom,"
the skeletal man gasped while looking at Grandma Theedle. Charles just shook his head. Then he glanced at the world clock.
1 minute left. This needs to hurry up.
As Charles listened, the struggling person on the ground had freed himself. A child, or maybe a small man, ran up to Charles.
"Mr. Charles, I tried to tell him just to get you some shoes. He thought you were threatening him. I don't know."
"What?"
Grandma Theedle looked at the skeleton.
"Let me be my own man, you said, and now look at you. Undead, stealing things, getting others to steal things, and kidnapping children."
Grandma Theedle began scolding the 7-foot-tall skeleton as if it was a child.
"Well, I'm actually a halfling,"
the man-child began, but soon the whole group began talking all at once.
"Mom, you always do this to me,"
an exasperated skeleton screamed.
"Mr. Charles, do you see how he talks to me?"
Grandma Theedle turned to ask at the same time as several other people turned to ask Charles several things at once.
"Mr. Charles, we have cleared the forest. Mr. Charles, do you have any more wolf riders? Mr. Charles, can you help? Mr. Charles!"
Charles, though, wasn't paying them any attention. Instead, he was looking over the top of his cabin at a giant floating squid. It glistened a blood red as it floated towards them. Streams of red liquid floated around it in rivers, rivers of blood. The questions and talking trailed off into silence as they all witnessed the same monstrosity. Many of them started shaking in fear when confronted with the world boss. Others grinned in anticipation of the loot that would drop. Some began creating battle plans in their head, thinking of tactics. Charles, though, had a different thought altogether.
"You all do something about that,"
he said, and waved his hand at the thing. He could see them start reading the quest screen he'd just issued. And now that they were distracted, he quickly made his way into the cabin, shutting the door behind him. He fiddled with his screen until he found the logout button and logged out of the game. Charles awoke inside the pod as its cover hissed open, grateful he had made it on time. While others may have their secret to how to live a long life, Charles had one too. At the same time, every day, he used the restroom. While some may scoff at the idea, having a regular bowel movement was something Charles considered essential to keeping himself as healthy as his body would allow. Charles could spend a long time educating youths on the value of having a consistent daily bowel movement, and would happily do so if anyone should ask. Belatedly, while he sat, he realized he had been playing the game a long time. It was a marathon of gameplay, and he didn't even feel tired. It took time to finish his morning routine, and he wasn't the kind of person to rush. He ate his breakfast, showered, took his medicines all as he normally would. Although with the return to the real world and the task of taking care of real-world business, he also had to deal with the daily aches and pains of his real-world body. He only looked at the pod for a moment or two while considering if he'd rather finish watching his movie before he rejoined the game. When he finally rejoined the game, he could still hear the sounds of combat outside. The 30 minutes or so he was outside the game was many hours of war inside. While he wasn't planning on going outside to watch, his tiger was scratching at the front door like it wanted out. Charles frowned.
I need a real big squirt gun to train it not to do that.
He opened the wood door and walked out to the porch to see chaos. It made no sense who was fighting whom, and in the sky above them, a giant squid, somewhat hurt, floated. It would reach down and grab people up to be thrown in its beaked mouth. Rivers of blood carved lines in the ground and drowned people. People were dying and fighting everywhere, and Charles could hardly make sense of it. Beside him, his ghostly roommate floated, and then she floated past, down the steps and into the yard, turning and motioning him to come with her. Charles wasn't sure he wanted to follow, but did anyway. With his stick in hand, he just bopped anyone who got in his way. If anyone would have counted those thwacks, the number 32 would have been their answer. Soon, both old man and ghostly woman were standing side by side in the middle of his front yard, and she turned back to look at the cabin. While there was fighting all around, there seemed to be a circle where no one came near them. Charles turned to look back at the cabin with her, just in time to see his cabin shake. The ground started shaking as well. Then his cabin exploded, as a giant rock troll, nearly as big as the cabin, burst forth from underneath it with a terrifying roar. It quickly leaped onto the squid, and together the two giants crashed into the forest. Charles could only look at his devastated cabin in shock.
Well, shit.